seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Hello, you're welcome along to Golf Weekly. We're back after a week-long hiatus. Hello, Fionn Davenport.
Hello.
Nathan Murphy, hello.
How's it going?
Good. Donald got in. That's good news.
You go to America for 4 days. This is what happens.
I spread the gospel. John Cusack tweets in, I guess you won't be visiting America soon at Fionn Davenport. Your Trump bashing may get you special screening at the airport. Full cavity.
Yeah, that's the kind of America that, well, maybe, is that the kind of America John would like to see where anybody who has a differing opinion gets cavity searched at the airport?
Fionn. Don't be cynical about Trump. Don't be cynical about this.
The man's trying to make his country great again.
He is.
Yeah.
MAGA.
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
It's going to be brilliant.
I think we're all really in a state of shell shock in this part of the world. And it seems huge swathes of America. Just one point. Okay, we'll move on. We'll talk about Trump and golf later.
Yeah.
But just one small, insignificant point. The millennials, all but four states, voted Democrat.
There's another one, an interesting point, is that all but four counties bordering Mexico voted for Hillary.
Interesting.
So along Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, they don't want, nobody wants a wall. And these are people who theoretically are the coal face of the kind of cross-border activity.
They should be most concerned with immigration. Yeah. But it struck me when I saw that graphic yesterday that it was the same situation with Brexit, which is the baby boomers, people of a certain age, are ruining it for young people.
Yeah, but it's also like with Brexit, something that really came up with Brexit, and I'm not sure if it's the exact same with Trump, was that the people who think they're affected are the people who are not. So places like Liverpool, Manchester, they voted to stay. Yeah. Sunderland, which actually doesn't.
3% immigrant population.
Yeah. So they're like fearful of what might come, where the people who realise actually there's nothing to fear are fine.
There's also, you know, because it's been portrayed as kind of the white working class revolution, it's the rejection of politics as you were, and I'm sure to a lot of people who voted for Trump, that's exactly what made them, you know, mark his card. But when you look at the stats that have come out, 48% of people earning over $250,000 voted for Trump, as did 49% of white college graduates. It's not that simple to say that, you know, the kind of disenfranchised working classes of America all felt that the established system wasn't representing them at all, so they're going to vote for this great outlier. It's not. There are other elements, and there are racist elements involved, strong racist elements involved, blaming the other, you know. And so, you know, and a lot of people are going to go, it's also worth bearing in mind, here we are, three guys sitting in Ireland talking about this.
I hate when people do that.
What? Give it. Oh, yeah. But,
all right.
You know what I'd love to see, Joe?
Go on.
You know the way there you mentioned the millennials, how they voted?
Yeah.
If they could track all of those people for the next 40 years. So when you're young, you feel like you can start a revolution and all this. In 30 years, these young white millennials are going to be earning 250 grand a year going, actually, maybe I'll just go with, the other rich guy.
The Woodstock generation. Who've
Everyone said. Becomes more conservative as you get older. You feel you have things to protect. You've worked hard for stuff. You know, it's a natural inclination. Like, I'm older than both of you, so.
Considerably.
Well, definitely more than you, but.
He's barely older than me.
Who, Joe?
No, let's leave it at that.
It's the fact that you have kids, you see.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. You're just in a different place.
I suppose.
I'm out there, man about
town. Oh, you're really living.
But we mentioned Trump because Trump isn't just elected president of the US. His election has an impact on the entire world, including us here in Ireland,
sure. No, we're very down.
And on golf,
the truth.
More importantly.
We'll come back to Trump and golf. Okay, so we'll move on. We'll up the energy. We'll feel good about life. At Golf Weekly NT is where you'll get us. We had record listenership 2 weeks ago to that Tiger Woods podcast. It was great. We thank you for that. That was good. In no particular order, I've 2 weeks worth of tweets here and we don't have that much to talk about. It's a quiet time for golf. At Golf Weekly NT, when we were away last week, we tweeted we were away and he said, "Pa, just the four of you, Joe, Nathan, Fionn's girlfriend. Must have been a great lads weekend away." It was. Clint Astridge, congrats to the at Golf Weekly NT at Irish Rugby for beating my beloved at All Blacks. Taking 111 years. We know. You can stop banging on about Munster now, which is a fair point. Mark Sheehan.
Who bangs on about Munster? Really?
Munster people?
Continually.
Do they?
I would say I don't go through 2 months of my life without 1978 coming up. Admittedly, we work in a sports show, but yeah. It comes up a lot.
Yeah, okay.
It just does. It just does. Northwest Golfer was in touch with a smashing picture. Smashing. Listening to the pod while at work on Pebble Beach.
Mm.
I hear.
Did you see it?
I did.
The par three in the background. He wonders, is this better than the tube? Not for me personally.
No.
I'm thrilled to think of people on the tube listening to us.
I want people when they're at their lowest moment to be listening to us.
Yeah, that's what we want here.
Crammed
if you're
up.
If you're listening to the golf pod, you're commuting or you're doing something not great.
You're stuck on the central line.
And you're thinking this might make your day better.
Yeah.
Nothing can make your day better if you're standing overlooking the 7th of Pebble Beach.
Yeah.
Like we can add to it.
Shouldn't
we
be
can...
thinking about us. Dave Kelly. Record listenership with no podcaster. You're resting on your laurels. Hashtag golf. Hashtag race to Dubai.
Come on.
You were in Chicago. Where were you? Oh, yeah.
I was all over the place.
Yeah. You did the North London Derby.
Yeah.
And I was in London on the tube.
Listening.
I was also on the tube. No, I didn't listen in. I should have listened in while I was on the tube.
And tweeted.
Yeah.
It's no good just listening. So you tweeted from the Golf Weekly podcast, or for the Golf Weekly Twitter account, that I was in Singapore or something?
It was a joke.
Yeah, no, I know that. Okay, so a lot of people got it. Sir Shankalot. Sir Shankalot said you can get great Callaway clubs in Singapore.
Yeah. You can get great Callaway clubs everywhere. All around the world.
Actually available in all good retailers.
We're not doing this anymore until we actually charge them. Dave Lavelle.
This is just a flavour of what's to come.
I know. It's like we're advertising to them now.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they've heard us do it since. Yes. I spoke to them.
Oh, you have? And they like it?
Yeah, though they love it. Okay. You know? Yeah. Dave Lavelle, have fun in China. Anurag Upal took us up literally. When are you guys in Singapore? Can the Singapore listeners host you guys for dinner and a round of golf? Which is very nice.
Yes. We just need to find a way of getting to Singapore.
Can we just second that, please? Yes, Anurag, come on.
He later was at the bus stop listening to your question, would you rather be Tiger Woods or you, had me in splits. I had to walk away from the bus to stop weird looks.
We never got your opinion on this, Fionn.
Tiger Woods.
I'd rather be Tiger Woods.
Yeah, come on.
Oh yeah, easily. No, because
the hubris of Dave McIntyre to think about that question
is ridiculous, because the question is exactly the same as when you hear, so you win the Euro Millions and invariably you always hear, oh my God, it ruined my life, it ruined my life. It's like, yes, it ruined your life because you didn't manage the money very well. I would. And also as well, the part that gets, sorry.
Does anyone think they'd screw it up? Nobody does until they win the lottery, and then you find that your friends change. Your family change.
Yeah.
Your girlfriend changes.
Yeah, it's true. The thing about the Tiger stuff, was it Dave was saying? And I don't want to be unfair to Dave, but that somehow the terrible mistake he made was, like, was all related to his marriage. It's like, he didn't commit a crime. He cheated on his wife. His marriage broke up.
It all depends on your morals. He doesn't have any regrets about it.
What percentage of famous athletes do you think cheat on their wives?
I'm going to say.
Don't answer that.
I'm going to say, let's go high.
Don't answer that. Damien McCauley says, FYI, that's in Asia, Joe.
Were you in Chicago seething when you saw that I had tweeted this?
No, it was great to be in Chicago, California. No, I wasn't. That was fine.
What state is Chicago in?
Illinois.
He practiced.
He was ready for that.
He's ready for everything.
Some game, though. I must say, I rarely...
We're very unfocused here today.
Well, because Trump is the president of the world and we're living in a dystopia all of a sudden.
Listened to the pod, says Ian Sweeney, while walking from the Lincoln Memorial to Capitol Hill. Awesome
nice.
Pod. Thanks, Ian.
Yeah.
That's great. That's so good to know.
That's a great walk.
I listened to... what's that show on BBC4? Fionn, you'll know this.
In Our Time.
Yeah. I was listening to Melvin...
Bragg.
Yeah. And they were talking about the Gettysburg Address in great depth. It was very good.
But you should listen to it if you're interested in that kind of thing. Every week on Thursday morning at 9 o'clock, they take us like a subject of cultural significance, get three experts and talk about it for an hour.
In great depth. It's very good.
It's really good.
Would you say it's the best culture show on radio?
Second best.
Right now.
Yeah.
I would.
After. Well, I think you're
other culture shows could learn a lesson from this one.
For listeners who don't know this, I present a culture show on another radio station.
The state broadcaster.
State broadcaster.
Who are the listeners who do know this?
Yeah. Inside Culture.
Oh, dear. Sorry. Sorry. But let's get back on track here.
Come on.
Okay. Alan Murray, listening to the Harrington pod, poolside in the Algarve, watching lads scuba dive. Did you see this? It was strange. There's just a bunch of men in Lycra in a standard swimming pool in the Algarve with scuba gear on, learning how to scuba dive.
Okay, yeah.
So you look ridiculous, obviously. And he points out, can't get yank at his arse out of my head on Harrington. Len Dowling, painting the garden fence and listening to Golf Weekly NT. It was Pro V1 Kenobi stuff, top drawer levels. Thank you. Brian Chow, awesome listening to the pod here in Vancouver on the drive to Sunday morning tea time.
What? Sorry. Why that extra measure of excitement with Vancouver?
We've never had a Vancouver tweet before.
No, we're not.
No.
Canada is an untapped market for Golf Weekly.
Canada?
All right, okay. All right.
Well, we'll move on. I'm labouring that point.
You are a bit.
Listening to the At Golf Weekly NT pod while making these bad boys. Happy Halloween. The old pumpkin thing going on.
Mm.
Keith Dempsey, what about getting this guy at Power for Seamus? That's Seamus Power. Teen it up in the US. We'll get him on. Hashtag yep. Fiona's no girlfriend. Jay O'Reilly. only just discovered you boys as I live in Oz. Can I be a regular? It's not really the terminology that we like to use. It's not a pub.
A fop.
A fop?
Yeah.
Prefer a friend of the pod.
Yeah, a fop.
Well, what's pub?
A fop sounds like
I don't
fop.
Know.
We're offering something else.
Pub.
No, well, you're a regular at a pub, like a bar.
Oh, sorry. Okay,
that was not an acronym.
Oh, I thought it was.
No, we're all over the place. This is what Trump has ruined us.
Yeah, it has.
Patrick Ryan. This is kind of interesting, I thought. So he's playing at the Albedia Golf Club with his mates. He said, we're discussing your latest podcast. You're welcome for a game if you're in Dubai in January. Interestingly, over in Chicago, I met a lot of Golf Weekly fans, which was a great thing. Do you remember the Catholics versus the Prods, that match?
Mm.
I met those guys in Chicago.
Did you?
Yeah, they're all great friends, all doing really well for themselves. Good guys, good fun. Plenty of Golf Weekly fans in Illinois over the weekend. Okay, we promise we will improve in section two. One last tweet before we get into some of the business of the week, the Ned Bank, Mike Coba. Rory O'Connor tweeted on the back of a discussion which came up on Off the Ball, re-cheating. We were talking about cheating in golf. Short version is I was in the mix for a competition 2, 3, 4 weeks ago and I was on the 17th. I think I was in line for very close to 40, 41 points. And I took a practice swing in the bunker and I mean took a grain at best, but I could hear it. I couldn't feel it, I could hear it. And I looked up, my playing partner hadn't realised. And I said, I'm after in the sand. Called the shot. Told this to a friend in the clubhouse later on. You idiot. You idiot. I do that all the time. Do you think people out there, do you think anyone else here would have called themselves, would have called that shot? If they're in the mix.
The answer is
yes. You've just passed
up
on 60 quid there, pal. So cheating and golf, but okay, the interesting thing, before we castigate anyone, lots of people tweeted in or texted into Off the Ball and said similar things. Like Rory O'Connor, re-cheating, that buddy, 16 clubs, 14 regular clubs, 2 foot wedges when necessary. I don't mind though, he's still shit.
If there is a sense that if you're never contending, like if you're always going to end up with, 25 points or that's where you're playing at and, so you kind of take a favourable lie or you touch a grain of sand in the bunker or you ground a club in a hazard, that in the end, 24 points or 26 points isn't going to make a blind bit of difference to the overall comp, but it definitely eats away at the integrity of the game.
Mm.
And your friend, and I don't know who it is, but we're all members of the same golf club, is talking through his hoop if he says that nobody out there would have called themselves. They would. I'm not saying there aren't people who wouldn't, but I'm saying is that the bulk of the membership would call a foul on themselves.
That's reassuring.
I absolutely think they would. Golf is a self-regulating game.
That's the trouble.
And that's the problem. So, it's up to your own personal integrity as to whether you do. I don't know. Maybe you're not that. Maybe some people aren't that kind of person. But like, it kind of eats away. If you knew you had indeliberately fouled, I think it would eat away at you. Mm-hmm. Which is probably the reason why you call the foul.
Well, in the fraction of a second, I thought, imagine I win this, and it's my first ever comp win.
Yeah,
it will feel hollow.
Yeah,
and amazingly, I won the week after, and I was thrilled to have done it.
Karma, which I don't believe in, but still karma.
My phenomenal golf game, obviously. Well,
Well, I presume the entire reason for discussing this was that he was getting 41 points.
No.
But people
I think 44
sorry,
points.
Sorry,
it's 44, but go on.
I think that sure, you're right with both the things you're saying. That so when your friend says people out there won't call it on themselves,
yeah,
I think if people are playing terrible and they've 24, 25 points and they clip a grain of sand on 16, they're probably going to go, what does it matter?
Yeah. I agree.
Say nothing.
Yeah. It's human nature.
Is that cheating?
I mean, technically, yes, but I know what you're asking.
Whereas I think anybody, the vast, vast majority, unless you are a cheat, if you're in contention, you know you're in contention and you're looking to gain an advantage, which you would have been doing.
Yeah. I tell you one way it's cheating. If you're very concerned about having as low a handicap as possible and a certain percentage of people who aren't even in the mix are in contention cheat and it affects the standard scratch, that could hurt you. I don't think it's rife, I have to say. I generally play with people, you know, generally across all clubs, I feel like I play with people who don't cheat. But the problem is, I wouldn't know if someone had cheated on a hole or two.
You're not watching. You're not looking out all the time going, what's this guy up to?
Like, it would be an interesting experiment. I might play with you in a friendly game over the next couple of weeks, Fionn, and cheat on every hole.
Yeah, or improve your lie, because
you wouldn't notice.
We're not in a comp.
I wouldn't notice.
But in a comp, I notice.
Do you? If you're on the green, do you notice exactly where your playing partners are?
You can't watch me the whole time. There are times in a comp where you hit your shot and you're on the far side of the fairway and I'm 30 yards away and you're standing over your ball.
Okay.
I can do whatever I want.
I don't, yeah, you're, okay, I see what you mean. But generally, if you're observant, and I think you would also be like this.
I think I would notice. Because how could you notice?
Well, okay, maybe like you can tap, the texter was talking about foot wedges. So like you can knock the ball, like you can give it a little tap with your toe, you know, fine. And if you're standing 30 yards away, you don't notice. But I think you can observe someone who is a cheat. You can see, cheaters don't cheat. Cheaters don't cheat just by kind of leather wedging a tiny bit. They also improve lie. You can see it. In the end, it's very hard to keep it. If you're playing in a competition and if the people you're playing with are generally observant, and by observant I mean is that they're taking the time to stop and watch you hit your shot as part of the etiquette of golf.
Mm.
You know?
The other form of cheating, of course, is minding your handicap.
Well, which happens
in big days.
It's endemic.
Do we feel like that's endemic?
It's absolutely endemic.
I don't understand it, because my logic is to get as low as possible.
It's because your ego is tender.
Yeah, but I do wonder, would you change? So it's like, it's probably different for you because people would know you're telling people what your handicap is, and people probably around Killeen, they're looking to see what your handicap is. Whereas, like, when the JP McManus Pro-Am is coming up.
Right.
If you qualify for that, you get to play with one of the best golfers in the world. So that's going to be on in 2-3 years' time. There will be people around the country right now thinking, how do we qualify for that? What do we have to do? And you look at that, you look at any big event like that, you look at the handicaps and you look at the standard of play and you think, nah.
Absolutely.
I don't get it, because my point is, nobody ever says to somebody who plays golf, what competitions have you won? They say, what's your handicap?
No, but it's
that's what defines you.
But traditionally, the nursing the handicap happens because you want to nurse it for the big prize comps, the captains, the presidents. These are the two. So they're kind of the majors of any.
Do you take my point that if you asked somebody who played golf about the standard of the game, you wouldn't say, did you ever win a captain's prize? Did you ever win the turkey at Christmas?
Okay.
You would say, what's your handicap?
If you're a member of a golf club, you see, you're a young guy and you're relatively new to the game of golf.
Hang on a second. I'm not that young.
No,
I'm
no,
not
but
12.
No, but no, yeah. But you are. But in the sense of like,
we're pushing this.
If you've been a member of the same club for 30 years, you've a long history in the club. The captain's prize is everything. Like the other members aren't constantly querying you on what your handicap is, or they might go, "Oh, did you get cut 0.1, or are you out to 14?" So the nursing of the handicap happens. So people go out a little bit so that they're out a little for the captain's prize. And then end up coming back after the captain prize or for the lesser ones. And so the problem, the GOI have changed the rules. So like you can only ever be cut 0.1 or one shot, or you can only get one shot back a year now. It's precisely to stop people going out 2-3 shots.
I must say, if I see someone win whatever prize, and I say this as a rank mid-handicapper at the moment, if they're mid-handicapper, high-handicapper and they win a big prize, I kind of think, so what?
But that's because you have ambitions to being a low handicap.
If somebody off single fingers wins, I think they played really good golf.
That's because you have ambitions to be a single figure golfer. And, mm-hmm. you know, realistically, there's a chance you could attain that within the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. So, but if you're talking to the guy or the woman who's been a member of the club for 30 years, they're kind of locked into the same handicap. Yeah. They're 15, they're 17, they're 11. They're not altering that much. So then their concerns are about negotiating the big tournament prizes of the season, and the captains, the presidents, they're the ones that you want. So in that sense, that's why when I say that kind of nursing handicap is endemic, it is endemic.
I'm not saying your analysis is wrong, by the way.
But you don't share that. That's not the way you think about it.
My point is, I don't understand it. But you're absolutely right. Yeah. I'm just trying to pick apart their logic. But
I think you're ignoring the social side of it. Yeah, so absolutely. Your members in Killeen, you're not living in the country. I don't know how much time you spend in Killeen in the evenings, if Killeen even has that sort of social setup now. It probably does.
Really, really very energised, very energetic social.
And as the club matures, that's going to become even more important. Yeah. So as you're saying, in 15, 20 years' time, when you've had the same 600 people as members, suddenly... Who won the captain's prize? Remember when he won it 3 years ago?
Your name is emblazoned on the wall.
Oh, is it?
Oh, yeah. Do you ever notice these things?
No.
What do you think all those names on the wall are for?
The president of the club.
Yeah.
The captains and lady captains. And then they have, like, who's won, like, the captain's prize winners.
Wouldn't notice that. I've been there how many years? Mm. Five. Still haven't noticed that. Don't care. Irrelevant.
Winner of the captain's prize. Have you played in the captain's?
Do you know what I tell you I'd notice in that club? A list of the lowest round records by members.
Have you ever played in the
Captain's
Kieran
Dunphy, 62.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'd notice that and I think, that's great. That's the wall I'd like to be on.
He's a scratch golfer.
You know, sure. But that's something I think is great. Captain's prize.
But Nathan's point is, the handicap system, I mean, I'm covering obvious ground. The handicap system exists to create an atmosphere of social golf so that people of differing levels can play and compete with each other. But let me ask you this. Have you played in a Captain's prize?
Don't know.
You haven't. I know you haven't. It was a rhetorical question.
How do you know I haven't?
Because you've told me before you haven't.
I may have.
No, but...
How often is it on?
Well, you'd have to qualify.
Once a year.
Oh, no, I haven't qualified.
Once a year.
No, I never have.
Once a year and it's played over 2 days.
Oh, God, no.
So I know, because we've talked about it.
I didn't actually know what it fully was.
But here, are you playing, when you go out and play golf on a Saturday, Joe, and you're playing in the comp, are you playing to win the comp, or are you playing for yourself, wondering how you're playing, trying to get your handicap down? Trying to shoot the best score possible. Are you thinking, I'm going out there, I really want to win this?
All of the above.
Yeah.
I think I'm trying to shoot the lowest round possible.
But you're...
Does it bother you if you win the event?
I would rather shoot a 76 and lose the event than shoot a 77 and win the event.
I think you would rather win the event with a 77, but I take your point. You would rather...
I wouldn't.
You'd rather lose the event on 76
than win
on 81.
I think that may change as time goes on you settle on a
plateau.
Yeah. So if you settle on 9, 10, whatever.
Well, at the moment I've gone from 17 down to, 14 down to now 12.8.
Yeah, so you're 13.
And off 12.8, because they can't... So the competition I won, I shot a 77, 44 points. They can't cut me because it was placing.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm still off 12.8. So my plan is to be an absolute bandit for the next couple of months.
I was just about to say, cheating is coming a little bit close to home right now, isn't it?
But I tell you what, my aim is absolutely to shoot the best round of golf every time. Maybe you're right. Maybe when you plateau,
you're
off the same handicap for 5 years, then winning the prizes is the thing to aim for.
And also the pressure of it. If it suddenly becomes something that matters, are you going to be able to play to your handicap when you're in the captain's prize playing the last three or four holes?
Yeah. No. Is the answer.
Yeah. Yeah. The entire club is out watching from the...
The captain's is a great event in any golf club. I mean, in our golf club, it's played over 2 days, and some others it's just played over the 1 day. But there's the captain's dinner, there's the prize giving.
Okay, fair enough.
It's a big deal for the club. It's one of the big social events of the year. And to win it is prestigious for the membership of that club. Mm. Now, again, I'm not suggesting for a second that you don't care about the captain's prize. What I'm suggesting is because you haven't played it. You and I, we've talked about this. You just don't remember. But the timings didn't work for you because of work.
Oh, okay.
Because you present on a Sunday, so you can't play.
Oh, fair enough.
But
tear it up on Saturday.
Yeah.
Once you
plateau, once you kind of fix on the handicap that you're at, and you start entering the big kind of prize events, I guarantee you, you'll be like, oh man, the captain's is a big deal. The president's is the second big one.
I should just say, so we'll move off this topic because we might do something on it with somebody, I don't know who, we might get someone in to talk about it. Mm. But you can tweet us at GolfWeeklyNT and it's something we'll come back to as the season quietens down over the next couple of weeks. Interesting to know views from around the world. And I should say as well, before I give the wrong impression of Colleen Castle, the guy I was talking to was laughing a bit and you idiot, and it was just locker room talk.
And that's always fine.
Well played, sir.
I don't think actually, realistically, if he was in the same position as me, for real, out there, I'd like to think this, he's a good guy. I don't think he would have cheated. It was just his, you idiot, you know. And I, you know, when he says everybody here would have done it, he was obviously speaking with a lot of exaggeration.
Yeah, and it's fair enough. It is worth bearing in mind.
Colleen Castle's great.
I've been a member of two or three golf courses. Cheat. But no, what happens is if someone gets a reputation within the golf club being a cheater, they're ostracized.
You're screwed.
You're isolated. It's like people are still courteous or hey, but you're never really, you're never included. People don't want to play with you.
It's like the first thing people would think about you.
It's absolutely right. That's exactly it. And it's a terrible thing. And generally, what are you cheating for? To get like, you know, 40 quid on the Saturday to win a comp that's... It's a terrible thing. And so I think that part of the is also part of the self-regulation, that people go, well, I definitely don't want to be that guy. Mm. So whatever it is that pushes you to call the foul on yourself, fair play. You know, it'd be horrible to be that guy you walk into the clubhouse and go, oh, there's
your man.
There's your man.
Yeah. Alrighty, more coming up. Alrighty, so Donald Trump and golf is something that we're going to talk about. First of all, the general reaction from the world of golf. You have Jack Nicklaus there, Fionn.
Congratulations
Facebook.
To the 45th President of the United States, real Donald Trump, he tweeted. All of us in the Nicklaus family are very happy for you and your family. We now look forward to you doing all that is necessary to bring our country back together again and make America great again.
This isn't a shock, not least because, you know, white millionaire golfers are generally in that corner. Mm. But back in May, Nicklaus was speaking about, at that stage, what seemed like the unlikely prospect of Donald Trump becoming 45th president of USA.
Actually, Donald's terrific. I've done several things with Donald in golf courses, and he has absolutely treated me great. He has been above board. He has been whatever I want to do, as long as it's reasonable. No, I think he's been terrific.
Is there anything transferable or surprising from your experience with Donald Trump as a businessman that you're seeing unfold on the political landscape?
Well, you know, I don't want to get political in this. I mean, but I like what Donald has done. I like he's turning America upside down. He's awakening the country.
We need a little of that?
Pardon me?
Do we need a little of that?
We need a lot of that. Is he a politician? Is he as smooth and politically correct as he should be? Probably not. But he'll learn. He's not stupid. He didn't get where he was being dumb. I like the guy. He's a good man, and certainly if he's the one that's on the ticket, I'll be voting for him.
No, seriously, you can grab them anywhere if you... Oh, sorry, we're back on it. He's a good man. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing surprising in that. I mean, you can... I'll put on my cynic hat and say, yeah, Nicklaus has been given a really rough ride by America, you know? He's had a tough time. Finally, there's someone who's going to represent the little guy that
he's been screwed by America.
But, you know, look it. He says, I don't want to get political, and then gets political. Mm. They all are. Are you surprised that there is a huge amount of support in golfing circles for Trump? No. Of course not. I mean, this is a conservative sport. Sorry, go on. You were going to...
I don't know what Ricky... It falls over. I don't know what Ricky Fowler's view is currently. No. But a couple of months ago, he was saying, I want to see America become great again.
But he had tweeted and he put America great. John Daly says, congrats, my great friend and president of the US.
Because hashtag now... Make America great. Make America great again.
Thanks. Thank you in all kind of that weird contract. Thank you, number four, putting America first. Suzanne Peterson, hats off for this man, real Donald Trump. Mr. President, congrats, my friend.
No surprise.
Nick Faldo, Mr. President, that was a major win. Powerful, lucky fountain. And there's a photograph of Nick and Donald throwing coins over their shoulders into a fountain. And then P.S. because Nick, you know, he's a funny dude. Can I have my quarterback? Hashtag souvenir.
David Faraday.
Oh, yeah.
Congratulations to the Donald. He really bought into...
Well, David Faraday has
American
interviewed Trump on a couple of occasions. Mm. There's a kind of a good sit down with him, and you know, it's soft shoes. Fine, we all agree, I think, but I think the election is a terrible, terrible thing for a bunch of reasons. I think he's whatever. I don't think it comes as to any surprise to anybody that I can't stand him. However, is he good for golf? There's an argument that he really is. You know.
That he is currently, or he could be.
He can be, and he has been in some respects. You know, like, no American president has ever been as tied to or identified with golf. Mm. Dwight Eisenhower played 800 times at Augusta during his presidency. He used to sneak down on the plane, play around, and he was very good friends with Arnie. But not even Eisenhower has that close association. No. Trump has 18 golf courses.
Something obnoxious, yeah. Well, the really interesting thing is it did seem as if, over the course of the last 18 months, as he said stupid thing after stupid thing, golf was slowly but surely having to distance itself from Trump.
Very diplomatically, though.
Yeah, very slowly but surely. And now you don't probably distance yourself from the most powerful man in the country. Yeah. So if anything, it means golf can now legitimately say, well, we're not going to upset the office of the president. And so golf,
if he wants to come
Trump
and turn up at the World Golf Championship.
Yeah.
And the likelihood is that he could. I mean, it, to echo something Nicholas said, there is a difference between Trump, the candidate, who I don't really think, some of the more outrageous stuff that he said, I'm not giving him a pass for saying it, but I don't even think he believes half the stuff he comes out with. I think he's surfing a wave to get elected. It works successfully for him. Whatever. That's a different conversation. Gil Hance, who, on the redesign of Doral, he said, he goes, he was never intrusive. He was really easy to work with. He was a guy that would listen. Martin Ebert, who also did the kind of redesign of Turnberry, or kind of Trumpified Turnberry, also said the exact same thing. He goes, this was a guy who was like an absolute delight to work with. And you don't get the feeling that he's just kind of sucking up. He's just going. And Trump himself, of course, because Trump is never short of self-promotion, he goes, the biggest misconception about me is that I'm not easy to work with. He said, this is 2 years ago. I believe I am. And that is borne out. Like, people who have had dealings with him in a professional context have actually found, until their time to get paid, which is an entirely different thing. But in the thing, that this idea that Trump has got a 3 second attention span, that only wants to do things his way, he's not. He is absolutely willing to concede to the expertise of others.
Yeah.
And so in golf, I'm not surprised that there are people who have had direct dealings with him have a fairly positive interaction with him.
All those people are on the payroll, though. All those people you're just talking about are on the payroll. Even Jack Nicklaus, who is designing a course in New York, a Trump course.
Sure.
His next big course in the Middle East, designed by Tiger Woods. His next course in Asia, designed by Ernie Els. So while it's not surprising at all that multimillionaire PGA Tour players and ex-pros would be on Donald Trump's side, he also is knitted in there with all the big names. Mm. They're all getting a buck one way or another.
Mm. Yeah.
That's absolutely true.
I'm not saying you're wrong with what he's saying.
No, I think oftentimes, you know, it's kind of cognitive dissonance, isn't it? You can hold two separate ideas in the one in your head. I mean, look, it's also worth bearing in mind, golf's relationship with Trump hasn't been easy. Like the land use conflicts when he built Trump Aberdeen, they've been ongoing for years. Like, he really has not endeared himself to the local population. Like, Trump makes no secret of the fact that for him, golf is an aspirational game, which for some is code for keeping the riffraff out. Now, he certainly isn't alone in this. You know, there's tons of exclusive golf resorts that have nothing to do with Trump at all, who have exactly the same policy. Like, he's on his public courses, he has pay-to-play courses, $250 to play, you know. And then there have been some who played with him who've said he cheats, you know, because this is a guy who has a handicap of 2.8.
He's very good.
Well, he says he's very good. Golf Weekly did a list of the best golfers in Washington, D.C. amongst the political class, and he's 12th.
Who was number one?
Do you know what? I
you know, I was going to ask you that.
It's some congressman that I've never heard of. So I just kind of.
Anthony Weiner?
No, he's off. Anyway, the guy is off plus three.
Wow. Almost Conor Deegan levels.
Almost Conor Deegan levels.
He doesn't have the swing of a 2.8 handicap, Donald.
Yeah. Now, he's won apparently dozens of club competitions, our Donald. You know.
You've seen his swing.
It's awful.
Awful, but. I mean, it's a big old slicer. Mm. It's big.
Yeah.
It's, you know, he's coming in from the outside in a big way. So it must be slicing massively.
Yeah, he's 70 years old and he plays off 2.8 with a slicey swing.
Donald Trump is 70?
Yes. What age do you think he was?
I hadn't really thought about it.
Yeah. 70-year-old man.
Oldest president ever?
No. Or maybe to be elected, taking office.
What age is Melania?
Melania, I am robot. I like America. She's younger.
And
Donald.
No kidding.
What attracted you first to the millionaire Donald Trump, Melania?
This is an opportunity for golf, isn't it? That's what you touched at the start. And they are going to be all over this. This sport that has zero morals are going to be hopping all over anything they can get. And you can criticize Donald Trump, but you look through the list of sponsors of PGA Tour events, there's many of them you could pick holes apart and go, really? Do you want to be associated with this company?
Yeah.
I mean, it's also, and sorry, as a final point in defense of the Trump and golf argument, is that, and believe me, you wouldn't hardly be surprised if that people have been looking for this. For all of the inflammatory comments, the disgusting stuff that Trump has said over and over again since he announced his run for president, there's absolutely no evidence of any racial, gender or religious discrimination at any of his golf courses. None whatsoever. And you know that people have gone digging to find nothing at all. So I think, listen, Trump is an offensive pig, but the policies that operate at his golf courses are in no way a reflection of the stuff that he's been saying.
It's very impressive from Fionn. It's far more nuanced and...
I suppose
he's done his research.
Yeah, fair play.
Because it's easy to say, I know on Twitter, as a John was having, you know, he had a go, because I have a go at Trump all the time. I find him an offensive character. I really do. I worry deeply about what's going to happen. I think this idea that he has awakened kind of working class, hard put upon America, a racist property mogul who inherited his wealth as the class warrior that America has been waiting for. Come on, please help. Are you serious? So having said all of that, you know, in the end, it's why I kind of can understand why Jack Nicklaus would say the things that he says. I'm not that surprised, you know.
I was looking back at the American presidents and their relationship with golf.
Oh.
Exciting morning for me.
Yeah.
Okay. I won't do them all, obviously. William Taft, 1909 to 1913. William Taft passed me right by.
No.
Okay.
Don't remember.
You kind of, what were you doing then?
I know other ones who existed before my lifetime. He was a 20 handicapper. But to the annoyance of his playing partners, would play out every hole.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's why I mentioned him, William Taft. Wow. Woodrow Wilson, under orders of his doctor, so 1913 to 21, under orders of his doctor, Wilson played as much as possible, logging more than 1,000 rounds while in office. He even had balls painted black so he could play in the snow. He never broke 100.
Well, he was very sick for the last 2 or 3 years of his presidency. I mean, really sick.
His doctor... was his golfing partner. No, you need to play. No. Dr. Carrie Grayson.
Take the day off.
Good. Yeah. Warren G. Harding, 21 to 23, played twice a week, wasn't very good, often scoring in triple digits. Franklin D. Roosevelt, 1933 to 45. I hear you say Fionn had polio.
He did have polio.
Before he had polio, yes. He was an avid and accomplished golfer.
He was quite the athlete and struck down by polio, so by the time he'd elected president, he was already... using a wheelchair and had used calipers and walking sticks to get around. So his golfing days were far behind him. But when he was governor of New York? Anyway, he was quite the athlete.
Dwight Eisenhower, you mentioned 53 to 61. Often criticised, I didn't realise, he was often criticised for his obsession with sport.
Yeah.
You mentioned his friendship with Arnie. When golf reached new levels of popularity. He only took 29 trips to Augusta during his presidency. He was a member. Obviously, there's the Eisenhower tree. And he had that desk. There's the Eisenhower room or desk in Augusta where he used to sit.
It's funny. My stats said he played 800 rounds. So maybe over the course of his lifetime.
Well, it says here he took 29 trips to Augusta. So he may well have stayed a week every time.
Yeah.
An athlete good enough to play linebacker at Army, Eisenhower nevertheless struggled with golf, playing to a handicap in the mid-teens. JFK, Big John. You've seen Kennedy swing, have you? It's really nice.
Oh, yeah?
It's flowing. It's elegant. It's stylish. It's a great swing. Now, it's a bit of its time. He's a little bit, you know, Brandel Chamblee would love it. The left heel comes up and it's all swooshy and everything. But he was really good. But obviously, bad back, Addison's disease. So he never got very good. And also, he was quite staunch about keeping it very low-key. You know, Democrat, man of the people, playing golf. Didn't like to showcase it. Lyndon Johnson then took over. He did a lot of deals on the golf course. Apparently, he sorted out the votes for the Civil Rights Act of 1964 on a golf course. Nixon.
You never think of Nixon as an athlete or a golfer.
No. 1969 to 1974, when he served as vice president under Eisenhower, Nixon took up the game and became a solid player, they say.
It's the only way he was going to talk to his president.
He broke 80 once, played off 12.
Oh, it's impressive.
Yeah, but it says here, gave up golf during his troubled second term. removed the putting green from the White House.
Oh, yeah. Did he? Yeah,
that was Nixon.
Was his lasting legacy.
Yeah, moving on into more modern times. George Bush Sr., 1989 to 1993. You're going to love this one. No president was born into a family with such rich golf tradition. His maternal grandfather, George Herbert Walker, president of the USGA, founded the Walker Cup.
Wow.
And his name is George Herbert Walker Bush, the president. Yeah. Wow, that's where the Walker comes from. That's very interesting.
Good stuff, huh?
Yeah.
He was off 11, George Bush. Inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame.
Sure. I just said sure.
Yeah.
Hall of Famer.
Hall of Fame golfer.
George H.W. Bush.
Arnold Palmer.
He's in the World Golf Hall of Fame. Apparently obsessed with quick rounds, insisted on playing speed golf, and any round that wasn't over in less than 3 hours was too long for him.
We like his style.
Yeah. Bill Clinton, of course. As in life, he often skirted the rules.
The mulligan, they called it the Clinton, didn't they?
Secret Service.
I'm going to take that one again.
Secret Service would often find his ball in trees.
And then find...
Yeah. Sir, found it. Your lie's good.
Oh my God. and it's a classic thing of, it's like, you know, he was notoriously a cheat at golf.
Clinton reinstalled the White House putting green that Richard Nixon had removed. George W., now watch this drive and all that business. Yeah. They say also an excellent athlete. Dedication to the sport wasn't as pronounced as that of his father. Played to a 15 handicap. He gave up golf at the outbreak of the Second Iraq War. And then Barack Obama, the eighth left-hander in the White House, the first left-hander to play golf.
Yeah.
There you go.
Could he play, though?
It says, I don't think he's very good. He's an ugly golfer. Obama eschews the perks of the job, it says, and the chance to play at the private clubs of Washington. He instead favours the military courses at Fort Belvoir and Andrews Air Force Base.
Yeah. Well, he played with Tiger a few years ago, went down to Florida to play with Tiger. Mm-hmm. And I was reading recently the bill came in for the weekend, so they also invited a few other people from around. It's about $4 million for the entire weekend with security and everything involved.
Yeah.
Eisenhower had the biggest impact.
Because of the tree.
Because he had the tree, which then injured Tiger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think Trump will
Did it injure Tiger?
It was under the Eisenhower tree at Augusta. The Tiger bent down to hit the shot that he damaged his knee. That he's probably still suffering the effects from.
Dwight.
But I think Trump will have the biggest impact on golf. Yeah. I mean, you'd have to bet. It's just his connection with golf is so...
Should we like do a full flip here and go, Trump is great.
No, he's not.
And you know it's a great golf course? Doombeg.
Doombeg.
Have you heard those guys on the radio over the last couple of days? They are delighted.
Are they?
Oh, the people of Doombeg are celebrating.
Absolutely.
Well, they're going to get a visit from the president at some stage. Probably. Yeah. Probably.
The other thing as well is that I saw the statistic. Trump hotels have seen a drop off in booking since the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
59%.
It's staggering. I was in the Trump Hotel in Chicago. It's stunning.
The Irish rugby team still booked in there.
That's why I popped by.
All right.
Yeah, the Irish rugby team stayed.
And it's
Trump
in
Hotel.
A beautiful location, right in the water.
Oh,
and, yeah.
Perfect.
It's got that. It's like a lipstick shape, isn't it?
Yeah. And all reflective glass. Yeah. It's very, obviously very tall, naturally. It's a Trump Tower. Mm. It's the third tallest building in Chicago.
Trump Tower in New York is an impressive building. Just, you know. Anyway.
Okay. Any final thoughts on US presidents and golf?
Some good research there.
Do you like that?
Yeah.
Some good stuff there.
It was good stuff. Well, it was very good.
Very interesting.
2.8 of a handicap. You're right.
So, the actual golf on at the moment is the Nedbank in South Africa. Henrik Stenson, the favourite. So the situation, if you're not following the race to Dubai, which of course we are, is that Danny Willett has lost all his form. So Henrik Stenson overtook him at the tournament. When did Henrik Stenson overtook him at the end of October. So where we are now is that Stenson, oh, so 1 million points in offer this week. And if Stenson wins there, he will win the race to Dubai for a second time. So we may have a complete dud, yeah.
I thought it was set up sort of like the FedEx Cup, that there was no way you could win it.
I know. A second win for the OA champion Stenson at the Gary Player Country Club would give the Swede a second Race to Dubai title in 4 years, if Willett finishes outside the top 10.
Mm.
There you go. McIlroy not playing. If he's got slim hopes of a third Race to Dubai. If Stenson is tied seventh with one or better, and Willett is tied second with two others or better, McIlroy will not be able to win the title, even if he defends his WP World Tour Championship title. So it could actually, it seems, be decided in South Africa when nobody's watching.
Yeah, that's a shame, because the World Tour finale is generally a good tournament,
yeah,
because you get all the best European players there.
I've literally read this off an official European Tour website. And yet I still doubt it.
No, no, it makes sense. It's not, there's no realignment like there is in the FedEx Cup, where the points go back and the top five can all win. It's a big prize fund right at the end.
It's much more of a genuine order of merit then, but you will miss the added luster of it being settled. Is it next week?
Yeah, next week, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there we go. Stenson's playing. Ross Fisher's there. Obviously, Willett's there. Louis Westhuizen's there. And then Mayakoba. In Mexico.
Ah, the irony.
I know. USA are playing Mexico in Ohio.
In Ohio this evening.
Yeah. This evening, yeah. If there's a riot, I don't think anyone blames anyone.
No.
Mayakoba, so Russell Knox, the favourite, who Graham McDowell beat in a playoff this time last year. Graham McDowell is there. Some interesting guys there, so who are turning up for this now. It's the nature of the reference season that you kind of have to play some golf in the autumn. So we are going to hear from here in the one clip all of these guys who are playing here this tournament in Mayakoba, Mexico for the first time. Luke Donald is there, Jim Furyk is there, Ian Poulter is there, and Ernie is there.
Well, I wanted to play a couple events in the fall. You know, you feel like if you don't play some, you're going to get left behind a little bit starting next year. So I heard good things about this course. You know, it's kind of a shortish, tight golf course. You know, somewhat of a good golf course, hopefully, for the way I play the game.
I've always heard guys talk about it positively. They talked a lot about the resorts, the three hotels, bringing their families. And really enjoying their stay here. And then what I heard about the golf course was it was somewhat tight, had to drive the ball well. I didn't know how long or short it was, but I looked at a list of winners, and you go back in time, it's guys that maybe not necessarily always hit the ball that far, but they hit the ball very accurately.
I would normally be playing the Race to Dubai. This year's a strange situation with having a medical exemption. So obviously I'm not in the Race to Dubai because of that. And I'm not going to be sitting at home on a sofa when I know there's a good golf course to play. It's a good resort. I've seen, obviously, the coverage in the past. GMAC winning last year. So it's nice to come and play.
Well, I've been watching it on television the last couple of years. And, there's so many great events in the fall series now that you have to come play here. Last week was great in Vegas. And then, this week's totally different environment, and the golf course is really special, so it's nice to be here.
It's a flavour of the debutants.
Yeah.
Of a certain vintage.
Well, I was just going to say, it's interesting saying some of the big names are coming.
Yeah.
We're kind of almost at the stage where you're talking about those four players as big names of a previous era.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, do they draw the crowds now?
I wonder. I would always go and watch Ernie Els play.
Yeah. Els with, the other three actually,
Poulter.
And Poulter touched on it there. This is a course they're probably looking at thinking, this is one of these, of the 45 tournaments a year, this is one of the four or five that might really suit my game.
And a win is a big thing.
You look at Fred Funk, Mark Wilson, Brian Gay, McDowell last year, all of those really short hitters.
Mm.
So for someone like Donald, this is probably one of the few courses he can go and go into with a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
GMAC is defending the title.
Yeah, he's there. He also launched his sponsorship, his new association with Harp Lager. Which he said he's looking forward to bringing back a great beer.
And we wish GMAC every success with his endeavour.
Yeah. So they're the two tournaments. I just wanted to mention, so there's Rory on Ryder Cup selection. There's Keith Pelly getting lots of abuse for seems they made a mess of the communication with the players and the media in Turkey. Shane Lowry was giving out about it. He pulled out of the tournament. He said, I wasn't the only one who believed the tournament was about to be struck off the schedule due to security concerns. He said it in the Irish Times. I know everyone's going to say how good it was in Turkey and how nice the place is, but there were times last week we simply didn't know what was going to happen. And that is a situation that doesn't suit me at all. I think the information we were getting, or probably more importantly, weren't getting, wasn't good enough. Nobody sat down with us and told us exactly what was going on. And Ewan Murray in The Guardian said this struck a chord with members of the media who were accredited for the event. There was no message, detailed or otherwise, in the build-up with regards to precisely why Turkey was safe and the tournament could be attended without fear. Instead, there was a disappointing silence.
Ooh. Yeah, that's not good.
Keith Pelly.
In the meantime, over across the water, our favourite man, Tim Fincham, finally left his post on Monday.
Oh.
Yeah, he's gone. The new commissioner is Jay Monahan.
Yeah.
Who was the deputy.
Got 20 years ahead of him now.
He has 20. He's the fourth ever only PGA commissioner. I just had a quick look at what Tim Fincham's accomplishments are.
Tiger Woods.
Cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching.
Tim Fincham / Tiger Woods. The PGA Tour purse has grown substantially. 1994, the purse was $56.4 million. That figure is going to be north of $300 million in 2016-2017. Fincham negotiated 3 TV deals, was part of the creation of the President's Cup and the FedEx Cup's playoffs, and played an integral part in the World Golf Foundation's First Tee initiative.
Wow.
Of course, let's not forget the First Tee initiative. But anyway, money, cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. He presided over golf at a time when Tiger Woods turned pro and made everybody rich.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. So, good luck, Mr.
I've
Monahan.
Never had a strong sense of whether Fincham is... doing
he bought
a
Trump
job or not doing a great job. Yeah, sure.
I think he's generally favourably considered.
Okay.
All
right. But he took advantage. So Tiger arrived and he managed to take full advantage of that.
Yeah. Well, I suppose, you know, it's not as if the money just starts flowing in. Someone has to negotiate the deals that gets the money flowing in. So the other one. Oh, yeah. Did you see this? That there were no anti-doping violations during this year's Olympic men's and women's golf competitions, according to the results released by the International Golf Federation. 197 tests performed, 197 tests passed clean.
Good to know. I have a couple of bits and pieces.
Okay.
So, the Zurich Classic of New Orleans, one of our favourite events.
This has almost turned into, what are we doing here? Is it like any other business?
Is this any other business? I don't know.
It just seems very...
I can stop talking now, if you feel just we're done.
Lots of news hits, it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, go on.
So they're going to reportedly switch to a 2-man team format in 2017.
Great.
Becoming the PGA Tour's first team event in nearly 40 years.
What happened? Do you both get exemptions if you win?
Yes.
Wow.
So you get 500 points for winning a FedEx Cup event, 300 for second. So both players will get 400 points. Both players will earn spots in the Tournament of Champions and the PGA Championship. They won't receive Masters invites, and they will receive the 2-year exemption that accompanies an official event. So there's going to be 80 teams. The top 80 qualifiers will choose their own teammates.
This is great.
This could be great.
This now, will be amazing.
It's going to be brilliant.
It has the potential to be great. The only problem is that the Zurich Classic of New Orleans doesn't necessarily get the best 80 players in the world.
Mm-hmm.
If you had guaranteed 70 of the best 80 players in the world, it could be unbelievable. And the fact they get to pick their own teammate.
That's the best part.
Imagine the guy who's... Imagine like Bubba has a dip in form and Bubba's number 81 in the world.
Yeah.
And they're like, nah, you're fine. Seamus Power was already tweeting Rory saying,
oh,
if you happen to be going to New Orleans, you're looking for a partner.
Is it twosomes? Is it two balls?
So they're going to do one round of foursomes, one round of four balls.
Great.
Yeah, it's brilliant. They need more events like this. Like last year, this was won by Brian Stewart, beat Jamie Lovemark and Ben Ann in a playoff.
Who could forget?
So they're going to need to try and get the better players.
Well.
And then... like, this is the sort of idea golf needs to get people interested.
I mean, do Jordan Spieth and Patrick Reed just go, yeah, let's go win that?
But they can't, because they have to play with somebody from outside the top 80. So the top 80 have to pick. So they're all in separate teams.
Yes.
Oh, I see.
And then they pick. Now, I was just having a quick look. Who's outside the top 80 at the moment? McDowell, Steve Stricker, Harrington, Keegan Bradley, players like that. So
I didn't know.
It has the potential to be very, very good.
Yeah.
But
I could see. Like, the top guy's staying away now.
Does Rory go to himself, right, I'm going to play a certain amount of events. I have to go over here now. I'm going to be put in this position again where I have to choose.
Yeah.
And you know he doesn't like choosing.
Yeah.
So who does he pick?
That's a
pick. Is he under pressure from Nike to pick somebody who is also Nike?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, does
partnering really Tiger Woods?
They should have just made it.
Mr. Noda the Gay.
Oh, yeah.
No, well, Tiger's sure. outside the top 80. Imagine.
Tiger and Rory
on the same team.
Yes. It would be
the
Which Tiger's like ranked like 8,000 in the world.
No, come on, that's not fair.
You can't. They have to be registered as a PGA Tour professional. So you can't just go, I'm going to get my mate in. Yeah. It basically turns into a pro-am.
I wish, though, they just free for all. Everybody just pair up. Go. I want to see Patrick Reed and
they could have a royal
Jordan Spieth.
It brings back those horror days as a kid when you're picking teams for football.
That's what I was thinking.
I'll take John. I'll take...
Like, if you're Mr. 100 in the world and you haven't really been on tour and nobody picks you, what would be great is all of this is dependent on having the best players in the world.
It is.
You have a draw. Live draw.
Where were you picked in football on the green?
Joe's going to say first.
I wouldn't like to say.
Just say it. Were you picked
first?
Were you picked first?
Generally.
Okay, generally. Nathan?
I'd say mid-ranking.
I was mid to kind of, I was like, in a 7-a-side, I was fifth, maybe. Fourth, fifth.
Yeah.
Rory on Ryder Cup selection.
So Rory, apparently, I've heard rumours, there are other golf podcasts.
No.
What?
Now,
no, there aren't.
They don't. There's only one guy presenting it. It's just him talking to himself.
Boring.
Like imagine Joe here. Snooze. Imagine Joe here by himself.
Yeah. And somehow, then, though, I hit a 7-iron, and it's funny. I caught it really clean.
Yeah,
and
somebody was cheating.
Well. Somebody caught it too well.
Somebody was cheating as I was on my way to 41 points. And then next week, I won it. Next week, though, on 44 points.
Sure, 77.
It's really, really great stuff.
I will explain if the listeners want. You can tweet at GolfWeeklyNT. I will explain how I've gone from 17 to 12.8 and broken 80 twice, thinking I never would.
Have you not explained that before?
I haven't talked about it.
Let's save it for a quiet week, Joe.
Sure. I'll let the listeners decide. If more than 10 people tweet me saying, how have you done it?
Right. I'm going to be checking this out for proof.
So anyways,
No Laying Up podcast. You should follow. If you don't follow No Laying Up on Twitter, you should.
I follow.
It's very, very funny.
Shut up.
I'm just saying it's an American thing. It's not like there's no rivals here.
There are.
It's fine.
Loads of rivals.
So we've had a lot of big interviews. Like we had Patrick Harrington on, inspired him to victory just a few weeks ago. We've had Rory McIlroy on this podcast. Mm-hmm. They had a Rory McIlroy interview, an hour long, pretty much, about 54 minutes. And
imagine you've just listened to us for the last 54 minutes. You're thinking,
yeah. So anyways,
like it depends. And did Rory say anything interesting?
He said a few interesting things. What was picked up was his thoughts on the Ryder Cup. He did say he had one brilliant line, and I'm trying to remember if he said this before, but it was one of the great McIlroy lines. So he was asked about whether he feels he gets enough respect for winning four majors. Do people forget how difficult it is to go and win four majors? And McIlroy says, I don't want to sound cocky here, but you know, there's guys out there who, you know, people are saying have had really good careers and they're doing really well. Like they've won one major. So if I'm looking at somebody like Jason Day or Dustin Johnson, and they've won one major. For them to get to four majors, they need to win three more majors. If I win three more majors, I get to Arnold Palmer.
Boom.
Good line.
Great stuff.
He's not wrong.
Great line.
He ain't wrong.
It is
That's exactly right.
line.
Yeah.
It's interesting because he has 45, 50 minutes with him, it gets into quite nuanced golf chat rather than. Often with Rory, you get 50 minutes and you have to tear through everything. So he's asked about what's your favourite shot at Augusta? Second shot to 13. What's your least favourite shot at Augusta? Second shot to 11. Changes he might make to Augusta.
Second shot to 11 is no fun.
He'd extend 13 if he had a chance.
Was he talking specifically about a shot at 11 that he hit into the water? Or was he just talking generally?
I think in general nobody on the tour looks forward to that shot.
The hook around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas everybody looks forward to 13 because it's such an easy drive.
Yeah.
In fact, they don't even take driver. Which he doesn't feel is right, that it needs to be long enough that on a par 5...
So you force the players to take driver.
To take driver.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So he would extend it. But what was picked up upon was his thoughts on the Ryder Cup. Now, when you're listening to Rory, you always get the sense he's just talking off the top of his head. And that's probably why he ends up getting in so much trouble and having to explain things time and time again. So he was asked about the Ryder Cup and Paul Casey not being involved. He kind of goes on to say, look, if it was up to me, we just have the top 12 players in the world rankings from both sides, and that'd be it.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't seem right that number 7 in the world, Bubba Watson, isn't playing in the Ryder Cup. And I know that that would take away a lot of the excitement around trying to get on the team, and it would harm the European Tour, but we shouldn't have a situation where world number 7 isn't on the American team. Paul Casey, world number 12 at the time, isn't getting on the European team. And that's really been picked up upon. Harrington has responded saying, it's nonsense. You really don't get how important this is to the European Tour. Now, it seems the European Tour are going to make some changes. Some of them might be coming from the Ryder Cup committee, trying to make it a little bit more open.
Yeah, Keith Pelly has said, we're not afraid to make big changes in the fallout from the Rory interview.
Yeah. I do wonder if you went down and sat with Rory for half an hour and said, let's have a think about the actual best way. Like, the Ryder Cup is the most important thing to the European Tour.
Yeah.
Every passing year, it becomes more important. I did have a quick look at that week. If they say picked the top 12 players in America and Europe the week before the Ryder Cup. So obviously, the more you look at it, the crazier it is that Bubba isn't there. He was the third ranked American.
Yeah.
Only behind Dustin Johnson and Jordan Spieth. Like, he's ahead of Fowler, Reed, Phil, all these guys, and he still isn't getting the team.
Has every right to have not gone to the Ryder Cup and hugged everyone and be such a good guy about it. He could have easily said, this is a joke.
Yeah. So the only players not that wouldn't have got on the American team were Bubba, or that should have gotten the American team were Bubba and Jim Furyk. And Furyk was like one place in the Ryder Cup, or in the world rankings ahead of Ryan Moore. There would have been four changes to the European team. Paul Casey would have been in. Russell Knox would have been in. Alex Noren would have been in.
Oh.
And Shane Lowry would have been in.
Interesting. Now, I mean, Harrington made the point, you only have to play five events.
Yeah, outside of the majors and the World Golf Championships.
And it's very important, obviously, for the European Tour, as you said.
And even then, that week, Lowry was 41st. The players who would have missed out were Fitzpatrick, Sullivan, Westwood and Keimer. So Lowry's 41st. The other four were all inside the top 50. So there wasn't a huge amount in them.
Okay.
So for the amount of excitement you get in the months leading up to it, to take that away for number 41 in the world compared to number 48 in the world.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Not that big a difference.
Yeah.
Are we pretty much done? I'm wiped. I think it's a combination of the jet lag getting back and then staying up to watch election night.
Did you stay up?
I went to bed and listened to a lot of it on Five Live on the Beeb, which was so good.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, when you listen to Five Live, you realise just how great a channel it is.
Yeah.
Listening to golf on Five Live, because you rarely end up doing it because you just always watch Sky at night. But if you're listening, I've ended up two of the last 3 years maybe listening to Saturday Night at the US Open on Five Live. And it is bloody brilliant.
I know. I often listen to Five Live, so their election coverage always US elections and some of the golf coverage, and think, God.
This is the kind of radio you want to make?
This is the radio I'm not capable of making.
Awesome.
They're phenomenally good.
Yeah, they are. Well, they also have massive amounts of resource. But
they've obviously got very good training. They speak beautifully and effortlessly. I don't feel like it's overly contrived, you know.
I went to bed at midnight thinking, whatever.
Did you?
Polls. But I got up at 3:30. I just woke up at 3:30. I didn't set an alarm.
Something terrible is happening. Yeah.
And I said, I'll just check to see what's going on. So I looked at Twitter and I could see, I think I saw one of your tweets or somebody, anyway.
A lot of people have said that to me.
And so
it's the what you've missed.
Yeah, yeah. Thing.
Yeah, so in the what you've missed. And then I went, what? And so I quickly turned on the laptop and I could not go back to sleep.
Sure.
So I was awake from 3:30 and then I did a full day's work yesterday and it was just...
Well, the reason I had a sense of doom is I was listening to Five Live, as I said, in bed, headphones on, just loving the coverage, you know. And everybody was saying, on Twitter, people were clearly watching on television and they were saying, Florida's done. She's got Florida. We're good. We're good. We're good. The stat came out, 70% of boxes opened and she's X number of percentage points clear. We're good. And there was one guy, some American guy on Five Live, who was just understated, really intelligent. Anytime they went to him, he said something very insightful or new or just really good. And the news broke about the percentage of boxes open, Hillary up this number of points, and everybody saying, that's it done. And they effectively said to him, so Donald's going to lose, Trump's going to lose Florida. Tell us now his route to the White House without Florida. And the guy just calmly said, Florida is, there's never more than a percentage point between the two candidates. Mm-hmm. I've looked at the counties where they still have to open boxes. It's a two time zone state. I think that Trump could get very, very close. In fact, he may still beat her. And they were kind of saying, well, you know. And I tweeted this, and again, a bunch of people were watching TV.
What?
And they were saying, no, it's done. Yeah. It's done. It's done. I went to bed thinking that probably is done. But I remembered the smart man on 5 Live when I woke up the next morning.
And of course, Florida's the one. Bush Gore, 2000. You know, the Chads, the Hanging Chads.
Hanging Chads, yeah.
That all happened there.
All the PGA Tour players living there.
Huh? Yeah.
All the PGA Tour players living there.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was... So yeah, so I think we're all, I think, wiped from, I'm definitely wiped still from yesterday.
Okay. Well, I think that's us done. Let's see if we're all still here next week. Fionn, thank you.
Thank you.
Nathan, thank you.
I'm excited about the Race to Dubai finale.
We will be all over the Race to Dubai finale next week.
All my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket town. Little JD starter kid right here.